Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you very much.
So, yeah, I was asked to give the talk. I was thinking of our discussion that we had at the beginning, where the topic was raised whether some of the tools that are around, there are so many standard model precision people around here, whether they should be updated also to new physics, or whether it's fine like that. And of course, then the question also arises whether we actually need something more for new physics. So I just quickly start with what we have.
I don't see anything here. If I do this like that, then probably. Perhaps. Yeah, that's. Let's hope.
Okay. So, what we have been talking about.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
Was mainly about the understanding of standard model processes that, of course, are really needed for finding new physics that we might want to see at some point. And of course, we need precise predictions, a good understanding of the detector and of the modeling. And yeah, there have been many talks already about that and discussions here, and they will be ongoing. And for sure, they are definitely important. Without that, we cannot really say something definite. But now, for the new physics, do we actually need something, some precise predictions or not? And when thinking about it, I was thinking that, well, if we just want to see a deviation from the standard model, so just seeing a bump somewhere or something, probably we only need to really understand the standard model and that part. I wouldn't really see where we would need some precision there. But as soon as we start doing some interpretation and testing models or also starting limit setting, then I would say, yes, we should at least check whether we need some next to leading order corrections, whether they can be large and whether they can change what we get out of the data. So I think there I would say rather yes. So it depends a bit on the question what you are looking at. And now I will go through some different examples where I think I might need something, more or less. And I will start with the discovery of, as I would say, a Higgs boson, which is roughly standard model-like, but which could be embedded in an enlarged Higgs sector, so it could be already part of new physics in some sense. It could be one particle of a two Higgs doublet model, or a singlet extension, and everything. Yeah, there are many more models, but those are really simple extensions, and it could be one of them too. So, what about the corrections then? I would say, for the QCD corrections, as long as there are no new colored particles, it's actually pretty nice because one can take them more or less over. So, like those examples that I just mentioned before, the doublet model or the singlet extension, one can basically take them over from the standard model and rescale the couplings, and then we have the process for the new physics model, which is really nice, and this is easily implementable in the tools. For example, this group has done it for HDK, which is now, this program is now SHDK, and they took into account a singlet extension of the Higgs sector. So I think that's rather easy, and they, at least you can take into account next to leading order QCD corrections or even higher order corrections. Of course, if you have additional types of particles like a charged Higgs boson or something, you would need to consider them specifically and maybe need to some calculation. So that is, yeah, some parts that are already known. However, if you think of molecular recollections, that's totally different. There, they cannot be easily extracted from the standard model ones, and I think one really has to go through the calculation and yeah, just do that. What one needs when one does this calculation, and I think that's one part of what you have to do, which is new, basically, in those beyond standard model things that you have to. It's not new as such, but as a technique, but new for each model. So you have to choose your set of independent parameters, and you have to do a choice of renormalization conditions there. So you have to perform a renormalization for your next leading order calculation. There is help in form of some tools. Céline Lecon, she wrote a program, NLOCT, which is based on fine arts and fine rules. And I think how it's set up, as far as I understand, is that you still have to choose your independent input parameters, which is, I think, an important step. I will show you later on another plot where you can see why I think that is, this can be crucial, and if you do it in a not good way, you will run into trouble. And yeah, for the renormalization conditions, you can basically specify whether you want to have an on-shell mass or MS bar renormalization conditions. And then I think how it's done, it gives you basically all those counterterm vertices that you have on based on the set that you gave the program. That's so far as I understand that. And then, of course, you have to calculate the diagrams. And there, again, you also have help by programs like Finance Formcalc, GoSum, Matra 5. I've been mainly working with Finance and Formcalc, and there I know pretty well which kind of models work and how you can do your calculation. Here I'm not too sure. Maybe people in the audience know better than me how far they are with doing those calculations for beyond standard model physics. Whether it's definitely in the developing process, but I'm not sure how far advanced it actually is at the moment. I was looking into some papers, but I didn't really see it.
QCD or electrolyte?
Both, I would say. I mean,
if
QCD.
In MATLAB, for example, I think you can do QCD corrections for any renormalized Lagrange.
Okay.
I mean, up to 2 to 3 at least. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, but not the electroweak ones.
I think they can do that, but it's all public.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So one example that I want to show here is the Higgs decay to 4 leptons in the 2-Higgs doublet model. So there it's clear that the QCD corrections are not really relevant there because it's a true electroweak process. And yeah, I just want to show those corrections, but to in order to see what kind of model we were looking at, writing down here the Higgs potential, which has lots of parameters. But the important thing is that we don't use the most general Higgs potential that you can write down for a 2-Higgs doublet model, but it's CP conserving and it's invariant under this symmetry. And then, yeah, in this potential there were these kind of parameters, and one squared and two squared, those lambdas. And additionally, we have the gauge couplings and the vacuum expectation values. And usually, it's hard to disentangle the Higgs sector and the gauge sector. They are just connected. And we exchanged those original parameters in the theory against those other parameters, like the tadpole parameters, which are zero at the tree level, and we just introduce them for better bookkeeping, basically. And then we have the Higgs masses, and the electric charge, the gauge boson masses, tangent beta, which is the ratio of the two vacuum expectation values. And then we just leave lambda 3 and lambda 5, as we don't have a very good other parameter for those two parameters. And these parameters, we basically renormalize on-shell, so on-shell masses. And yeah, the tadpole parameters in such a way that the tadpole terms are cancelled at one loop. And these three parameters we define as Diabar parameters. And then what we use those programs I showed before, fine rules for the creation of the model file. The tree level part we checked already with an independent one. Then the matrix element generation was done with finance and form file. And then the whole thing was implemented into Prophecy4F. So it's really using a standard model tool that is already on the market and introducing this DSM model there. And now I'm showing you an azimuthal angle distribution that we got out. It's still preliminary. We haven't done all the checks that we would like to do. But still, I think for just seeing what can happen, I think it's nice to look at that. So here, the dashed curves are the leading order corrections, the leading order predictions, and the solid curves are the next to leading order ones. And the blue ones is the standard model, so you see that, in some parts you have larger deviations, larger corrections, and in some other ones you don't have. What you also see is that we then have two scenarios that there the corrections are rather large, and while all those leading order curves are very close together, implementing the electro-recorrections in the two Higgs doublet model, they will split those curves. So actually, if we had such scenarios, we probably would be easier to say whether this one scenario is actually realized or not. So you can
what
see.
What is this angle? What is the variable? What is the x-axis?
This is the azimuthal angle between the planes of the decay products. And the other angle is basically the angle that is the deviation of the standard model type Higgs, or rather the other way around. So
and is there, you're saying there is a shape change? Is there a shape change?
No, not really. I'll come to the next plot. So basically, what is plotted here is the next leading order to leading order for all those three different scenarios. So for the standard model, where we know that the shape does change. But then if you look at the other ones, it looks rather similar. So maybe one could actually try to get some sort of K factor out and just use the standard model prediction and multiply some ESM factor or something. But that, of course, has to be studied a bit more carefully, whether it's really, there's really no shape change.
So how well can you measure that with ellipse? I mean, in particular, this unnormalized distribution.
But these are four vectors, right? So it's trivial to measure. It's a plane of a pair of muons relative to the plane of the pair of electrons. But then, sort of, what you can ask is, can you? I don't. It's hard for me to understand the shape change business. But it's impossible to look at this distribution and say if you have a standard model or if you have the two Higgs Abbott model. Is this more or less the statement?
Yeah, I think it's probably hard to see. I think that the shape change between leading order and next to leading order and the shape in total is rather similar to both of it. But yeah, that's some point that we really have to look into a bit more.
Because cosine beta minus alpha, this is a normalization of the Higgs to ZZ linkage, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, then you can also measure directly Higgs to ZZ production, and you measure that, right? If you change that, you change the total Higgs to ZZ kappa.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they essentially are measuring, and give me.
Yes, but then I don't see why what you gain with the distribution there, because it's an overall normalization that you change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's.
It would be interesting if you change, if you can probe the CP property of this vertex, which you can, I think, but.
I mean, the question would be whether the loops somehow would change the shape or the.
Yes, but. Here it's simply modify the vertex. You don't modify any Lorentz structure. It's
yeah, that's.
And if you basically say that Higgs goes to two vector bosons.
Yeah.
Okay. And you don't introduce you don't introduce too many additional form factors relative to what you have in the standard model. And we're going to see this in this distribution. You probably indeed have to change CP properties or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah. And yeah, I mean the CP properties are definitely the same here for the Higgs, so we didn't do any CP violation. And also we are at the moment really looking at neurons and electrons which are taken as massless. So also that if you looked at taus or something, then you would also have a Z CP odd Higgs boson in the vertex, and you could maybe get something from there. But since we really put the masses to zero, this is of course gone.
Why is the red curve above the blue curve? Normally, the HZZ vertex always at tree level is suppressed by sine beta minus alpha. This is less than one. So how do we get larger signals?
I'm not completely sure. I mean, what we see that it might be the sine that comes in somewhere, the sine of the angle. But I'm not completely sure why it actually goes up and or down. It might be also that it's an effect because it's only up to next to leading order. Maybe if an effective mixing angle or something would be even better to use, and that there are some.
It is surprising because at tree level, definitely the standard model would be the largest. So.
Yeah.
The leading order is in the denominator.
Sorry?
The leading order is in the denominator on this plot.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, here you
not here.
Can more or less see that the blue line is always on top of the dashed blue line.
No, but the red line is above the blue line.
Yeah, yeah, sure. That's so the corrections really go up.
Wait, so the blue line is.
So if you take the solid the dashed curves here, that's the leading order, and that's where you see the behavior that you would expect.
Oh, so the dashed blue is always higher than
the other two.
The dashed red.
Yeah, but then we add those corrections, and then we see this.
And on the next plot, you divide by leading order.
No, but you can see it already here. I mean, something is happening. So you're saying that a previously suppressed. Think of the total part. I mean,
yeah,
just complete the total width. partial width, you're saying it can actually be increased.
Yeah, it looks like it, yeah.
Do you understand that?
No, not yet, actually.
All right.
So we started looking into that, but yeah, as I say, it's still. I mean,
that sounds like a rather important observation if it's true. So
yeah.
One would understand the origin.
It could actually, it could really be that it's that one would need to take higher orders into account, that it's really a change of the mixing angle, of the effective mixing angle, something, and that if you'd only take the next to leading order, you will see this upwards, but if you take the next to leading order correction, which you could maybe do in an effective mixing angle, then you would take that into account. Could be that something like that happens.
There is more than one coupling involved.
You also have said to leptons, right? And also this is a different.
No, but this must be true in just the H to Z, Z rate. Forget the decays at the Z.
But there are loop corrections.
Yeah,
loop corrections to H to Z, Z.
They're changing two things. They're changing C and tangent data as well.
Doesn't matter. I mean, the.
I think there is more than one coupling involved. It's not just. Otherwise, you should go like the leading mode.
So you have corrections to set decaying to leptons or not? SUSY corrections.
SUSY?
No, two Higgs doublet model. Not SUSY, just two Higgs doublet model.
Just two Higgs doublet model. But yeah. You have corrections to this.
Yeah.
So both production
and decay. Only decay. Yeah,
you know, but it's
only the decay.
Corrections to
the question is, do we have Higgs to Z?
Right.
And then set decay to, and you have the.
No, we really have those pentagon.
The full thing.
Yeah, the full thing. So really, like prophecy for F, for the standard model, but.
So it's more than.
Yeah.
Doesn't factorize.
Yeah, of course.
It doesn't factorize. I still find it remarkable that this is true. So one ought to understand where it's coming from.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, since the checking is not complete,
okay.
I was kind of brave for showing it here, but I couldn't. I thought if one is talking about that and saying, thinking about whether it's necessary to include higher order correction, it's kind of nice to see that there is something happening. But of course, it might still change. But there have been already some checks done, so it's not. Totally.
But you don't know off the top of your head, if you were to just forget, don't decay the Z's, and just show the rate, the change in the partial width of H to ZZ.
I didn't.
You didn't check that.
Do you have data points where you have the same value, 10 data, different values, because I'm data myself?
I don't have one. We might have, but in total, but yeah, I asked Lucas to run it for me to get it. But, so yeah, I don't have it. Yeah, we were kind of surprised that happened too. That.
And the first thing I would check is whether this is, if H to ZZ by itself has this property.
Okay.
Or is it something more complicated?
Yeah, so this is just electro-recorrections to this, and seems to be, might be important to take that into account. Now coming to the next part, if we have some new colored particles, so going beyond the singlet extension or two Higgs doublet model extension, then of course the QCD corrections would need to be re-evaluated too. So at least partly, sometimes you can split them into the standard model QCD part, and then you just take into account the new diagrams with the new colored particles. But you definitely would need to do so. And for Higgs boson production, I just listed two examples where for SUSY processes that has been done. That's HDK and SUSHI. And yeah, for example, for this GLUIN production process, you would then have also GLUINUS running around and stops. And yeah, so you would have new particles which would make necessary to take them into account. And I couldn't resist to put
it on. Is this diagram that you draw there really important for anything? I mean, with the kind of bounds that we have on a GLUINUS, I guess it must be.
Yeah, okay. I just picked one to have all those particles. Yeah, I guess, yeah, with the heavy GLUINUS, it would probably be less important. Yeah. Though you have to be. Somehow careful. Just dropping it wouldn't work. So you would need to do a proper matching then, if you want to say that the GLUINUS is not important. So you would need to do it to take it into account if you want to have a consistent MSSM. But numerically, yeah, I would agree. If the GLUINUS is large, that probably doesn't contribute much. But of course, the stops could be still small or small. Okay, then one small remark that what we have seen for Higgs boson production via VBF, that there actually the SUSY electroweak effects were much larger than the SUSY QCD effect. So really separating the QCD, the standard model QCD, and the SUSY QCD part. So so sometimes it's really good to also look into the electroweak stuff. That's what I wanted to say there. For maybe I should also mention that for this process, there are some parameter regions that especially Sophie found that had larger effects. But what we saw with the normal benchmark scenarios at that time was that the corrections in total, the SUSY corrections were rather small. So it's more really saying that electroweak effects might be important too. Then of course, if you have new colored particles, you have also QCD correction for processes with new colored particles. And I just wanted to show basically one example about swarm production and decay, where they considered the pair production of two swarms, which then decay into two jets and using ET. And they have the leading order here in black of the HD distribution. I must admit, I took the distribution where the differences were the largest, but I took the scenario well, so the squawk masses are the largest. So here in this scenario, they were around 13, 14 TeV, not 13, 14 TeV, 1.3, 1.4 TeV, sorry. So around this corner. And then what they did was checking whether leading order multiplied with a K factor and the next leading order will match in the distribution. And especially in this HD distribution, they saw that there are some differences. But also here, I think if the squawks are even heavier, that probably will decrease too. So at some point, those lines will lie pretty well on top of each other. The other scenarios, like they also looked at this SPS1A scenario where there are the squawks are rather lightish, like 400 GeV-ish or something, and there they had quite large differences. So for that, it would have been even more important. Okay, then another group looked into the same process, but also included the parton shower. And I, it's a little hard to see. And here is the PT of the TARDIS jet, and here the Messini T distribution, and they use different showers and compared it to the next leading order. You see that here there are some deviations for that part, they are smaller the way wrong. But they were kind of surprised that I think Huthia and Herwig, that they had this difference and looked into that a bit more closely. And if I understand correctly, the thing is that the different PT is going into the parton shower in the different in Prithia and Herwig plus plus. So the one takes the PT after a first decay and the other one before the decay, if I understand correctly. And they also had a plot where they modified Prithia so that they got the same PT, and then this difference disappeared again. So, okay, then another topic. So until now I've been talking about production processes and decays, and that their higher order corrections might be important also in BSM models. But then another thing is that it might be also important to have a precise input and precision of for the precision observables. For example, if you go back to Higgs physics, in the standard model, the Higgs boson mass is a free parameter, and in extensions of the standard model, it can be that it's predicted not in the 2x doublet model or the singlet, but like in the MSSM or the next two minimal supersymmetric standard model. There, this Higgs boson mass would depend on other parameters of the theory. And then a precise calculation of this mass is needed also as an input for the cross-section and decay width, so that one knows what one has to put in there. Though this also raises some issues whether you can actually put a loop-corrected mass into a loop calculation. So if you have QCD corrections only, that won't be a problem, because then it will be only the external particles basically, and then you won't have problems with the divergence cancellations. But if you are considering electroweak processes, that might be an issue. And of course, you also would like to know the Higgs mass value very nice, because if you can predict it from your model, then this will constrain your viable parameter space. And of course, they also need a good prediction. And just to repeat how you calculate that, you have a two-point function where this is a matrix of this form, where those self-energies enter this form. Here I just took the CP conserving case where we have a mixing between the CPE and Higgs bosons. And then you have to calculate the zeros of the determinant, and then you get your corrected Higgs masses. And then just one plot to see how important those corrections are. An example of the lightest MSSM Higgs boson mass. This one is the Born line, the blue one is the one loop line, and the red one is the two loop corrections. Here's the band of 122 to 128 GeV. And you can see that, of course, the constraint will be more precise if you take the two loop into account. I mean, I haven't plotted any error bands, especially I would have a hard time to have an error band for the one loop case, I think that would be really huge. And you see that with the two loop one, you would exclude more precisely. And of course, you should also take into account the order corrections that are not in here. And actually, here I think there are already many people working on that. And there are all those different types of self-energies that have been calculated, because the most important thing that you have to do is calculating these self-energies, and then you can extract your zeros of the determinant. And there are lots of two-loop corrections that have been performed already with external momentum and with vanishing external momentum, complex parameters and new parameters. Only for three loop, there is only one fixed order calculation, and all the higher orders, we only know the logarithmic contributions from that at the moment. And here's basically the list of people that did the calculation on the slide before. Okay, then I just want to go back to the renormalization issue and just show you one example where you can see that it's important to find a good scheme. And of course, you have some criteria there that, like, you want to have. One nice thing is if your input parameters and the observables are easily related, like with a on-shell mass to the physical mass. And of course, you don't want to destroy a symmetry relation, so relations between the parameters should be respected. So you don't want to use more renormalization conditions than you actually have of free parameters. And then you, of course, want to avoid unphysically large corrections. And I think that's especially in the supersymmetric models where you have these SUSY relations between the parameters, that's sometimes difficult. And here's a case for the CP-even analysis and Higgs boson, just three level and one loop. And there we looked into different schemes, the on-shell one and the R-bar scheme and the mixed scheme. And this parameter basically shows the deviation of the MSSN. And if you go to low values of lambda, this on-shell scheme deviates. And that's just because we have then unphysically large corrections. We have, in our counter terms, we have a 1 over lambda somewhere, and so they just blow up. And so this scheme, the way we define this on-shell scheme, is just not very good for low number values. For larger ones, it's fine, and one can also use it and compare the different schemes and get an error estimate of that.
Just out of curiosity, in that plot, is H1 mostly doublet, mostly singlet? What's the story?
I forgot. I honestly forgot. I don't know. I remember. I would need to check it. Yeah, it's also, I think also the scenario is a bit outdated meanwhile, but yeah, that's why it's for illustration. Okay. Then, of course, we have seen now that the squawks have been excluded for larger and larger masses, and then the question is how reliable those fixed order calculations are. And what is nice about those finite diagrammatic approaches is that they take all log and non-log terms into account at a certain order of perturbation theory, that you also get the non-log terms. But the problem is that you might have large logs of this sort, where this is the SUSY scale divided by the top quark mass. And so I would say that the finite diagrammatic approach is a good prediction for lower SUSY mass scales, but if you go to large scales, it will not be reliable anymore. And then there are other approaches like the renormalization group equation approach. Some people have been done work on that recently, really focusing on this approach only. And the principle of this approach is that you assume that all SUSY particles are heavy. That's the order of the SUSY mass scale. And that above this scale, the whole MSSM is valid. And below this scale, the standard model is valid as an effective theory. And you match at the scale MS the MSSM peaks coupling, Corti coupling, and to the standard model 1. And then you evolve the lambda to lower scales using the standard model 1. And you can calculate the Higgs mass spread via this relation. So this is the principle. But here, those people have done a more dedicated job with having different scales and so having different models in between. Okay, and if you do so, the logs are resummed to all orders and you have a good prediction for large SUSY masses. So the idea was then, if one wants to have some possibility to scan from small masses to high masses, that one could combine those approaches, and we ended up with this plot. And here you see the fine Higgs plot, which is only fixed order, and you see that this deviates, and already for at 2 TeV it's questionable whether only this fixed order calculation is valid. And then those other curves are basically expanding the logs to 3-loop order, 4-loop order, 5-loop order, and then some runs. You see that finally they come close to these red lines, which are the numerical result logs. And yeah, again here, I think it's important to take that into account, and for especially if you want to constrain your model, it's important to know that the tool is still working or not. So the new version of one to have those blocks in, and it's going to be improved even further. Okay, then another thing, of course, is that if you calculate those quantum corrections to the Higgs masses via this Feynman diagrammatic approach, you also get a change in the mixing of the Higgs bosons that you also can calculate if you have those self-energies. And they will induce a change of the couplings. And here, just as an example, is the coupling to vector boson squared normalized to the standard model 1. In the MSSM, where the dashed curves, H1 and H2, are the one-loop ones, and the other ones are the two-loop ones. And you can see that also there you have changes if you take the higher order and take on.
What's the stop mass for this? What is the good stop mass that's assumed in this plot?
I didn't put them there. I'm not too sure, actually. I'm always forgetting those parameters. There are too many parameters. Sorry, I would need to look it up too. And normally I have a backup slide because I know that I'm forgetful, but I forget
to put it on. Unlike the plot you showed us earlier, here they're all below the standard model.
Yeah. And that's clear because here it's really just the basically an effective mixing angle that we introduced. So here we don't, in the other case we really had the pentagons in there and everything. But here it's really only taking this mixing of the Higgs bosons into account. So it's really just acting like an effective mixing angle. In that sense, I think it's understandable. But also here you can see that it's the corrections can go up and down both ways. Okay. Yeah, and then I just wanted to say that there are also many tools to actually use if you have Higgs boson process and you want to have some Higgs masses. There are many tools that have different ways of dealing with different things, like they have different schemes, and most of them this one is a pure renormalization equation approach tool, and all the other ones are basically fixed order plus the fine Higgs which implemented the leading and the next leading logs, basically some ones. And then you have differences in the scheme. Many of them are just DR-bar schemes. There are different, you can also have different schemes there. And then of course they treat, for example, how they treat the top mass and, as an input, those differences, there are differences which can give you quite sizable corrections actually, or differences. Yeah, and some of them are also applicable to beyond MSSM models, not beyond standard, but beyond MSSM models, and some are dedicated to the MSSM tools and the MSSM color. And yeah.
So do you know that you say CP Super H is MS Cora?
Yeah.
And I always thought that if you try to do that in SUSY, within MS4, you actually get divergences of the two loops.
I think they probably could. I mean, you can do MS bar and then correct for the mismatch, basically. If you take into account some SUSY restoring counter terms, I think they would need to do something.
Aren't you just doing DR bar at the end of the day? Isn't that? I didn't realize it. I guess I should ask Carlos. Actually did.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether it's then for all the parameters or whether it's some of the parameters are really MSR parameters that I can put in. So, yeah. And yeah, this is just the list of authors for those plots. And so finally, I think for testing new physics, higher order corrections can be important for the interpretation, so it's definitely worth checking. I mean, if the SUSY scales are rather large, or the new physics scales are rather large, then maybe it's not that important anymore, but then you might have to deal with other problems. And so I think for the interpretation, it's needed, and one should also look into QCD and electroweak corrections, because sometimes, especially if you enlarge the big sector, those electroweak corrections might be even, well, at least as important. And then, of course, you don't only want to have a good prediction of the production decay process, but also for other observables like masses and mixings that's also kind of feeding back into each other, I would say. And then finally, I would just as an outlook do a short advertisement, just in case you know someone who is looking for a PhD position. We had an opening there. The deadline is the 31st May this year, and please give it to people who might be interested in it. Thank you.
Yes.
discussion, comments, anything.
So yeah, I'm really curious to follow up on the electric corrections for the, that would be extremely surprising, right? If that's true, you mean enhancement of the standard model expectation, that's extremely surprising as well, and it would be useful to know more broadly. But if you can let us know as soon as you're confident with calculation.
Yeah.
And I guess you're not certain if that can be reinterpreted just as a shift in the mixing angle, or if it's really coming from the from other corrections.
Well, it can't be if it's larger.
Even in a radially correct, with the sine 6 being off diagonal elements, it would be. But then it makes it extra surprising.
Yeah, exactly.
And it would be great to see a comparison with different values of cosine beta minus alpha and the same value of tan beta. And I guess also, as you take the mass of the heavy Higgs states heavier than 600 GeV to see if that affect it. If it's those diagrams, it's mattering or not.
I don't have any other questions on this.